Greetings, listeners. I am Pastor John Nelson. I serve at Ebenezer and Triplice Lutheran Churches in Kandy, Ohio, Minnesota. And we are ready this day to take a look at the narrative lectionary text for this upcoming Sunday, which happens to be All Saints Sunday. And our text for All Saints Sunday in the narrative lectionary is the contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, which is from 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 17 through 39. So Elijah is a prominent figure in the Jewish religion and in the Old Testament. The ritual closing ending of Sabbath involves an invocation of Elijah. That would be because Elijah bodily ascended into heaven on that chariot of fire in 2 Kings chapter 2. And because of that, Elijah did not die. And so there is the idea that Elijah can return and that Elijah's return will herald the Messiah and kind of a new age for Israel. So Elijah is a really important person. He is the first major prophet. But all that being said, the story of Elijah is about six chapters long. It's not a big story. There's not a lot of action. I mean, there's plenty of action, but compared to like Moses, for instance, whose story and teaching spans several books, Elijah just doesn't have the same in-depth coverage of his life for whatever reason. He will be referenced in the rest of the Old Testament following 2 Kings quite a lot. And he, of course, is referenced in the New Testament as well. But the actual actions and activity, the actual story of Elijah is not that long. And it actually begins in 1 Kings chapter, it's chapter 17. Elijah is recognized as a Tishbite from the region of Gilead, which is in the north, and so he is of the northern kingdom of Israel, and he is prophesying against King Ahab, who is the king of the northern kingdom at this time. And Ahab becomes king in chapter 16 of 1 Kings, and the text goes out of its way to tell us that King Ahab did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. So as far as kings go, Ahab is kind of the worst. So the split of the kingdom of Israel into the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah occurred 950 or so years before the birth of Christ. King Ahab is 150 years later, something along those lines. So the split between the north and the south has been the reality for a little while. King Ahab is worried about his neighbors to the northwest, the Phoenicians. And he knows he can't defeat them militarily. They're a mighty kingdom, the king of Sidon. So instead, he proposes to marry the daughter of the king of Sidon, a woman by the name of Jezebel. And Jezebel, you know, however, you know, that title, that name has certain connotations in our culture today. But the original Queen Jezebel, she was a devout worshiper of the god Baal and the goddess Astarte or Asheroth. These are two Canaanite gods. Baal is the god of thunder and rain and dew and lightning. And Asheroth or Astarte is the goddess of fertility. And when Ahab marries Jezebel and moves Jezebel to his capital, Samaria. Jezebel brings along with her hundreds of priests and prophets of Baal and Astarte. So she comes with her own religion. King Ahab allows a house of worship to be built in Samaria to the god Baal, and allows a pole to be erected in Samaria. That pole would be where sacrifices would be made to the goddess Astarte, or Asheroth. So Ahab gives in to the demands of his devout religious wife Jezebel, and does what is evil in the sight of the Lord. Much like King Solomon, right? King Solomon, before the split of the kingdom, he married foreign wives, and the reason he gets in trouble with the Lord is because he allows the worship of the gods of his foreign wives to take place. He even allows altars to be built to them. He even seems to engage in worship of those foreign gods himself. So King Ahab is falling prey or victim to a calamity of his own devising, but it's not a new calamity. It's something that's been an issue for the kings of Israel on a number of occasions. So, in response to this, Elijah the Tishbite from Gilead, in chapter 17 of 1 Kings, prophesies that there will be a drought, and tells Ahab that he is in trouble for worshiping Baal and allowing the worship of Baal to take a firm root in Samaria and in the northern kingdom. And so Elijah predicts the drought, and then the Lord warns him to flee. And so he flees, and he's staying in a wadi, which is like a small pond or a place where a spring, or a place where you can find water in the desert. And he is there for a while, and the Lord sends ravens to feed him bread and meat, and he drinks water from the wadi, but then eventually the wadi dries up. And then the Lord sends Elijah to a widow at Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon. So the Lord sends him into the territory of King Sidon, into the territory of the Phoenicians, to this widow of Zarephath. And the widow of Zarephath will reference the Lord your God when she talks to Elijah. All of this indicates that the widow of Zarephath is not a believer, is not an Israelite, is not a Jew, is not a believer in Yahweh. Instead, she is likely a worshiper of Baal. I find that interesting given the rest of our reading for today. So this widow is a likely worshiper of Baal. And when Elijah comes to her house, she has just a little bit of food left, and she is going to make the last of her food and feed herself and her son, and then she expects to die. Elijah says, as long as I am here, your food will not run out. Go make some food. And Elijah stays with the widow there for a while, and the food doesn't run out. After some time, the son of the widow dies, and this is her, right, her future, because a widow without sons is in quite a lot of trouble. But as long as she has a son, she can expect her son to be able to take care of her when she's older and things like that. So her son is her future, and her son dies. And the widow blames Elijah. You have come to bring me my sin to remembrance and to cause the death of my son. That's a quote from 1 Kings 17. Elijah carries the son to the upper chamber and then cries out, O Lord my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I am staying by killing her son? Then he stretches himself upon the child three times and cries out, O Lord my God, let this child's life come into him again. And the Lord listens, and the life of the child comes into him again, and he is revived. This is the first instance in all of Scripture of resurrection from the dead. So Elijah revives the widow's son, and the widow responds to this, Now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord is in your mouth is truth. So, you know, that might indicate conversion. We're not entirely sure. It's not a full-throated conversion, that's for sure. But she recognizes the power of the Lord at work in and through Elijah. That brings us to 1 Kings 18. After many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year of the drought, saying, "Go, present yourself to Ahab. I will send rain on the earth." So Elijah returns to the northern kingdom of Israel, and he manages to encounter Obadiah. Obadiah is in charge of the palace, so he is in the court of King Ahab, and Obadiah saved a number of prophets, hiding them in a cave, providing them with bread and water because Queen Jezebel was killing the prophets of the Lord. And so Obadiah is faithful to the Lord, so we know that about him. Obadiah is looking for water because the army of King Ahab is kind of anchored by his chariots, and horses need a lot of water. And so King Ahab wants to find water for his army, for his horses in particular. So Obadiah is looking for water and encounters Elijah. And Elijah wants Obadiah to bring King Ahab to meet with him. And Obadiah doesn't want to carry that message. Obadiah says, "Yes, fine. You know what will happen if I take this message to King Ahab? We will go to meet you wherever you say, and you won't be there. And then King Ahab will be mad at me and he'll kill me." Elijah has to promise that he will be where he says he will be, and so Obadiah agrees to carry the message to King Ahab, and that brings us to our reading for this upcoming Sunday from 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 17 through 39. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" He answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. Now therefore have all Israel assemble for me at Mount Carmel with the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent to all the Israelites and assembled the prophets at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and said, "How long will you go limping with two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." The people did not answer him a word. Then Elijah said to the prophet, "I, even I only, am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets number 450. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it in pieces, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire is indeed God." And all the people answered, "Well spoken." Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose for yourselves one bull and prepare it, for you are many. Then call on the name of your God, but put no fire to it." So they took the bull that was given them, prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, crying, "O Baal, answer us." But there was no voice and no answer. They limped about the altar that they had made. At noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, "Cry aloud, surely he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he has wandered away, or he is on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep and must be wakened." Then they cried aloud, as was their custom. They cut themselves with swords and lances until the blood gushed out over them. As midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation, but there was no voice, no answer, and no response. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come closer to me." And all the people came closer to him. First he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord came, saying, "Israel shall be your name." With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. Then he made a trench around the altar, large enough to contain 2 measures of seed. Next he put the wood in order, cut the bull in pieces, and laid it on the wood. He said, "Fill 4 jars with water, and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood." Then he said, "Do it a second time." And they did it a second time. Again he said, "Do it a third time." And they did it a third time, so that the water ran all around the altar and filled the trench also with water. At the time of the offering of the oblation, the prophet Elijah came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your bidding. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. Then the fires of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, and the dust, and even licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, The Lord indeed is God. The Lord indeed is God. So some interesting things here regarding our reading for today. First of all, when Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, Is it you, you troubler of Israel? This ends up becoming a fairly standard response when the prophets are sent to prophesy, and typically prophets are sent to prophesy to kings because they're not doing what they're supposed to do, and the kings often come with this accusation that these prophets are just stirring up trouble. They're disturbing the peace. They are troublers, and that's going to be a common kind of idea. A common argument between the kings and prophets. And Elijah turns that back on Ahab. I have not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. So we've got an adversarial relationship right away. The people are gathered then at Mount Carmel, and Elijah comes near to all the people. That coming near is language that's often used for worship. Come near to the Lord, come near to the altar, come near to the temple, things like that. Elijah, you know, comes near to the people and asks, how long will you go limping with two different opinions, right? So he wants to force them to make a choice, which is, you know, he puts the people in kind of a difficult situation because their king and queen are definitely on the side of Baal. And I'm sure they're a little bit worried that they're going to get in trouble if they forsake the worship of Baal. Plus, Baal is the god of rain and storms and dew, and it's been a drought for 3 years, and they could really use some rain. So this is a difficult ask that Elijah is giving them, and you can tell that because they don't respond. Right? Elijah asks them this question, but the people did not answer him a word. That's what the text tells us. The people did not say a word in response to Elijah. So they're not super keen on having to make this choice, at least initially. So then we have the actual contest between the Lord and the prophets of Baal. The prophets of Baal, you know, they cry aloud. They do everything they can. They mutilate themselves, which is a reference in the Baal mythology, Baal is kind of thrown down and is destroyed, and then the other gods mourn for Baal, and they disfigure themselves, and they hurt themselves, they cut themselves, and so worshippers of Baal, as a part of their worship, would sometimes inflict pain upon themselves, cut themselves, disfigure themselves, and things like that. So the prophets of Baal do that as well. Elijah mocks them, you know, oh, is your God sleeping? Is he on a journey? What's going on, huh? And there's no answer to that. But eventually nothing happens to this offering that the prophets of Baal have set up to sacrifice, and there is no fire that comes down. Elijah then, of course, calls down fire, and the fire comes at this point. Even though the offering and the altar has been soaked in water three times, the Lord's, you know, the fire from the Lord falls down upon the altar and it consumes everything. When the people saw it, they fall on their faces and they say, "The Lord indeed is God. The Lord indeed is God." You might think that's a conversion, but if you continue on in the story, well, first of all, Elijah is going to have all of the prophets of Baal who are at Mount Carmel rounded up and executed, and then Elijah is going to pray for an end to the drought and then have a meal with King Ahab, and then Elijah is going to rush back to Jezreel, and to carry word that the drought is ending. And but it's not going to convert Ahab. It's not going to convert Jezebel. It doesn't seem to convert a lot of the people of Israel, even though they saw all of this and they responded, "The Lord indeed is God." It seems to be a fairly weak response in the end, because Elijah is going to have to flee for his life after this, because Jezebel is out to get him. So Ahab and Jezebel are still very much, you know, on the side of Baal, and Elijah doesn't have much help, at least initially, and he has to flee for his life, and he goes out in the wilderness, and he says to the Lord, "I just want to die." The Lord tells him to rest, the Lord gives him some food, and then the Lord sends him on a very long journey to Mount Sinai. And Mount Sinai, Elijah has an epiphany, or a theophany, an encounter with the Lord. First there's an earthquake, but the Lord is not in the earthquake. Then there's fire, but the Lord is not in the fire, which is interesting. And, you know, we can take that back to the sacrifice on Mount Carmel. The Lord sends the fire, but the Lord is not in the fire. And then Mount Sinai, there is the sound of sheer silence, and that's a fascinating little Hebrew word and wording that's very difficult to translate. But there's the sound of sheer silence, or overwhelming silence, or something along those lines. And then Elijah realizes that's where that is the indicator of the presence of the Lord. And he has this theophany, and the Lord gives him instructions to go back to the northern kingdom and to appoint a new king over Israel, and a new king over Samaria, and a new prophet, a guy by the name of Elisha. Elijah will do those things, will oversee the anointing of these new kings, and will oversee their victories over King Ahab and over another king, Ahaziah, until eventually in 2 Kings chapter 2, Elijah will be taken bodily into heaven on a fiery chariot. And that's kind of the sum total of the story of Elijah. Like I said, it's not a super long story. There are some interesting parallels between Elijah and Moses, especially if you take a look at Exodus chapter 24. Moses sets up an altar to the Lord at the base of Mount Sinai that includes 12 stones, indicating the 12 tribes of Israel. Elijah does that at Mount Carmel. Moses offers a sacrifice on this altar. Elijah offers a sacrifice on the altar he builds. Moses and the elders of Israel have a meal to celebrate the covenant, and Elijah will have a meal, or tell King Ahab to have a meal to celebrate the renewal of the covenant here. On Mount Sinai, Yahweh manifests in glory and indicates God's presence by fire. Mount Carmel, we have the fire consuming the altar and the sacrifice. After the people of Israel commit adultery and worship the golden calf that Aaron set up, Moses instructs the Levites to kill the idolaters. Elijah instructs the people to kill the prophets of Baal and Astarte, because they are idolaters. Moses, after all of these things, will go back up to Mount Sinai and have his theophany after this encounter at Mount Carmel and being chased by Jezebel. Elijah will eventually make his own way to Mount Sinai, where he will have his theophany. So there are a lot of parallels between Elijah and Moses. They often get referenced together. Moses is the lawgiver, and Elijah is the first and greatest prophet. And of course, that will come into play on the Mount of Transfiguration, where Jesus is transfigured, and he is conversing with Moses and Elijah, and the disciples that went with Jesus see all of this, and Peter wants to erect three tents or altars to indicate, you know, Jesus and Moses and Elijah were here. And so when Jesus does that, it's an indication of Jesus's fulfillment and completion of the Old Testament, at least in regards to Moses and Elijah. So, how does this connect with All Saints Sunday? You got me. Elijah is certainly one of our saints, from long ago. just like we claim Moses as a spiritual forebearer and Abraham as a spiritual ancestor as well. Elijah was an interesting guy. He did things on his own sometimes. We have no indication that the Lord told Elijah to go and prophesy about this drought. We have no indication that the Lord told Elijah to execute all the prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel. Elijah's kind of willing to do his own thing. And, you know, that's always a dangerous proposition when you're doing things on behalf of the Lord. But it seems to work out for Elijah, probably an indication of how great a prophet he is. But he's mixed. I mean, like all of the people in the Old Testament, like all people today, he is mixed. He's got good and bad to him, and that's still the case today in terms of the saints. We are all mixed. We all have saint and sinner. We all have good and bad in us, the righteousness of Christ in us, of course, the faith given us by the Holy Spirit, but also our own human brokenness and our own human sinfulness as well. So if there's a connection to All Saints Sunday, I think it might be in that. There might be more connections too, but I need to spend a little more time thinking on those connections. I think that's about all I have in terms of kind of history and context, cultural, historical, and literary context for our reading this upcoming Sunday. You hopefully know more now than perhaps you ever wanted to know about Elijah. So I hope and trust and pray that you have a great rest of your week, and I hope that this extra information will help you in hearing any sermons preached this coming Sunday or in the future about 2 Kings chapter 18 and the prophet Elijah at Mount Carmel. That's all. Thanks very much. Bye.